Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
After the Bible is read in many churches around the world, the pastor says, "The word of God for the people of God." And then the people reply, "Thanks be to God." There is a seminary student who was in chapel, and she was preaching on the text that we're going to use today. It's a text that most pastors skip past. It comes up one time in the lectionary every 3 years. And there's a couple choices. So most pastors choose not this. They choose a different direction. So when this pastor-to-be was in chapel and she was ready to read this, she couldn't bring herself to say the word of God for the people of God. So what she said instead was, "Like it or not." And the people were quiet. So I want to share that with you, like it or not. Now, after they had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up. Take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you. For Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he was infuriated. And he sent and he killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the Magi. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. "A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they are no more." Like it or not.
When the walls fell and the hungry child cried out for help, did you hear the sound? Did your heart break? Does your heart break now?
It seems really reasonable to skip over this text to me. I can see why pastors would see this and then decide, let's find something different. Can we just move to Matthew 3? I don't think we very often want to stay with our nightmares. I know I don't. Because they're terrifying. Words don't really do justice to how bad it can be. But sometimes we need to remember those nightmares, to talk about them, to say them out loud with others. Sometimes we need to remind ourselves that we're in this together, no matter how bad those nightmares become. Herod took the lives of those boys under two, and Rachel wept. She wailed. She was inconsolable. And before Herod, it was Pharaoh. And before Pharaoh, well, we might not have a name, but we know that Pharaoh wasn't the first to commit those kind of atrocities. And we know Herod wasn't the last. Wounded Knee, Auschwitz, Hiroshima, Selma, police raids at Stonewall, Ferguson, Boko Haram in Nigeria this week. Every war. Sometimes it turns out that only anger is love. Sometimes only sorrow, sometimes only broken hearts are actually strong enough. Sometimes even those don't feel like enough. See, we can't pray for peace or have the courage to stand for justice. We can't even love ourselves until we can first raise a voice like Rachel with Rachel and refuse to be consoled. Until we can weep, we can't really breathe. And until we can breathe, we can't sleep. And to move through a nightmare, we have to move through a nightmare. Rachel did just that, and she refused to be consoled. A voice was heard, wailing in loud lamentation. Rachel weeping for her children, she refused to be consoled because they are no more. I know that I would have wanted to console her. I would have wanted to push her through that night, to take away some of that agony. And sometimes we need to be pushed through the night. Sometimes we do. And sometimes you can't push through consolation. And knowing the difference between the two is almost always impossible. So accompanying someone going through that process can leave us stuck. We can't push them through the night. And sometimes they need to be pushed through the night. So what are we left to do? Well, Rachel was left to ask God a question. I think it was something like this. Does your heart break, God, when our hearts break? She needed to know that, and I believe that it was her wailing that got her through the night. And so we're taking some time during these weeks to hold these challenging biblical texts in conversation with our own lives, with the anxieties and the fears that keep us awake at night. Last week, Linda introduced us to this and talked about the breadth of this issue in our country and in our world. That in this country in particular, we have an epidemic of sleeplessness. We have folks in here who probably prescribed more drugs to help people sleep this week than anything else they prescribed for people. We have that because we have real worries, fears that keep us up at night. Our children, our parents, our job, the job that we want to have but we don't have, the job that we do have but we don't want to have. No matter where we are, it seems like we're not where we want to be, and so we find ourselves unable to sleep. This morning, though, we turn from just some of those things that keep us awake that, while as real as they are, they don't always come in the form of nightmares. Those things shake us awake a little bit. But today we're talking about something harder than that. Something that when you read this text, you can't escape the harshness of it. You can't help but wonder, where could God possibly be in the midst of a story like this? Every boy under 2 in Bethlehem. And so whether you read this story literally and want to look back on whether this really happened in that way, you can just look around the world and know whether this was literal or not, it happens. Children's lives are taken needlessly. And you don't have to look far to find that. You don't have to look far away to be terrorized by the reality of it. So this is a troubling story. I had to give somebody a hug when he came in because I said, I know that in your work, you're not afraid to go there with people. And this morning, I'm going to try to do that. So this is all I got. And he gave me a hug. Maybe there's something to that as we learn about this. Like, who are the folks around us that can go there to those places that are the places we don't really want to talk about? And how do we reach out to those folks and be in it together? Because this kind of text leads people to wonder in a real way, where can God possibly be in that kind of nightmare? And if God is there, why didn't God steal the headline? See, it's a reminder to me that the birth of love in Bethlehem to this unwed teen mom in the middle of nowhere, it didn't come to fight violence with violence. The birth of love came to guide us and lure us toward beauty and hope and justice, and it didn't overcome that with its own sense of fear. And so Matthew really wants us to understand our stories, the story of Jesus, in relationship to everything that's gone before it. Because if we can sense that God was alive in the people that have gone before us, luring them toward hope, then we might be able to recognize it when God is moving in our lives in those subtle and subversive and behind the scenes kind of ways. So let's look back to them to see how God speaks to us today. And so the writer of Matthew does that by reminding us that Herod isn't the first. See, everyone in their day would have heard this, and they would have remembered that the Pharaoh took those firstborn sons of the Hebrews as well. They would have remembered that they weren't the first to go through the unthinkable, and they won't be the last. They would have known and heard in that just as it was Moses who led them to freedom, it's Jesus that's going to do the same in this moment. Jesus is that new Moses, and salvation today echoes salvation that came to us in the past, just as Moses brought folks to freedom. Just as he led them, so too will Jesus. So we're called to hold our stories in relationship to theirs and in relationship to the ones that went before them. Matthew is so convinced by this that he keeps bringing in lines to remind us of the past. Hosea 11, out of Egypt I called my son. So if you've been living in this text for a little while, you might recognize that Egypt is always the place that we're trying to get away from. But in this story, Matthew is sending Jesus to the place that everybody wants to get away from, to get away from what's happening in the place where you're supposed to want to be. That's happening because Hosea said a long, long time ago that freedom is going to come to us as one that leads us out of Egypt. And so Matthew had to have Joseph take the baby with Mary to Egypt. First, you have to get there if you're going to come out of there. Is that right? And so Matthew is trying to read this story in the old story to help people see this moment right now. God is bringing us into the future by reminding us of how we've been together in the past. So I think that the story wants us to watch the silhouettes of Mary and Joseph and the baby making their way to Egypt, the place that everyone is supposed to be afraid of, to find freedom and comfort in that. But what happens when you read the story and you wonder, what happens to those boys that were left back in Bethlehem, whose mom didn't get up early in the morning to say, let's get out of here, whose mom couldn't find a way? Where could God possibly be with those little babies in the midst of that violence? We're going to hold those tensions this morning. We're going to wonder about that. And it's not comfortable. It's not for me. Back in November, Sarah and Eleanor and I got to go and hold some really hard realities and tensions. We went to an art studio over kind of toward Land Park area. And as we went inside, around the walls, everywhere around in the walls, you could see photography. It was phenomenal. It was a teen photographer had put up images of teen homelessness in Sacramento. And then you could read the stories of folks that were there. And then we stood in this space. Nobody quite knew exactly what was going to happen. And one story started to emerge. And then another person stood, and another story started to emerge. See, because these are stories that are around us all the time. Sometimes we don't have the eyes to see them or the ears to hear them, but they're always with us. So the stories kept going. See, these to me are the kind of stories that Mary would have told when she was taking that baby into Egypt. These are the kind of stories that Rachel wept over. They're the kind of real stories that are around us all the time. The folks who started our preschool that's now here started something back in 2003 called Tubman House, and it's helped over 100 young women and their children. Teen women and their children. It's a story that reminds me that God's love doesn't just meet us in the moment and arc back to the past and say, look how God's been alive in the past in these subversive and unexpected ways, but look around you. What are those stories that are all around you right now? Where might God be moving in the lives of the people that are in your midst, in real, gritty, raw lives? And so we're going to take a few minutes to hear from some of the powerful and courageous and beautiful young women who are moms from Tubman House, and from the staff person who's lived there for 10 years helping people through. Thanks, Casey. And as they come forward, I want to invite you, I want to invite all of us to just open up, to wonder where God's redemption and God's love might be in these stories, in these powerful women.
In life, there's pain, sad hurt, needing a change, a lot in your way. You find yourself fading away. But what can you say besides there's stress in your life? You can't get it right, but you know your future is bright. Time is going fast, hurts to even think of the past. You smile and you laugh, knowing happiness doesn't last. You find yourself wondering how much it's worth to escape the pain, knowing things will only get worse. You have to be strong, separate yourself from the wrong. You have to be strong, or believe me, you'll never know what could have been besides just living in sin.
Thick thighs, not the slimmest waist. You could see it on my face. The struggle of a mixed chick. She screams, just get me out of this place. I open my eyes, I keep breathing. Trying to be myself while pleasing everyone else. The tone of my voice, the shade of my skin. Will I ever fit in? I come from within. Don't touch my hair. My race is only one part of me. Giving up is not an option. I want it so bad. I don't want to be in a box. I just want to be me.
I used to walk with my head down low because I always felt I had nothing to show. Surrounded by people, yet I felt so alone. So I thought to myself, that's the way it goes. The screaming, the yelling didn't help, not at all. And by the age of 10, the hitting began. As years went by, I was nothing but scared. So I thought to myself, so I kept to myself and had nothing to share. Then came the day when I finally got away. The judgment, the whispers continued to be, nevertheless, it didn't bother me. In 2007, I was a mother-to-be, stronger than ever, happy as can be. Now with my son by my side, his smile so bright, hand in hand we walk the world exploring with great delight.
This is stupid. This is crazy. You cannot have this baby. This will ruin your life and change it. Get out of my house.
My name is Andrea, and those are some of the things that my mother said to me when I let her know that I was pregnant. Fortunately, I got into Tubman House when my daughter was 5 months old, and there I gained the support that I needed to become a better parent, to graduate from school, and now I get the opportunity to be a part of the Tubman House Graduate Academy.
Hi, my name is Teresa. I first came in contact with Tubman House when I was 8 months pregnant. I was homeless due to both my parents passing away when I was 18. They passed about 10 days apart from each other, so I was undergoing a lot of grief and homelessness because I had no support from my family. So with Tubman House, I found them. I found a tremendous amount of support. I had a place to bring my baby home to. I had a lot of people that I could call family. So with that, they helped me with just everyday life struggles. I got a car. I got my high school diploma. I got everything I needed for me and my baby. I had stable housing. And now I'm here to speak to you today. I'm part of the Tubman Graduate Academy.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Lourdes. I've been through Tubman twice. The first time, it was with my son's dad. After we graduated, we were able to find a home and call it a home. Unfortunately, 2012. He got deported. So I had to go back to Tubman. We were able to save my son and I. I was able to buy a car and buy our home and get a home. And I've been with Tubman since 2008. And I've been blessed to be here in the Graduate Academy.
I see hope woven into the stories of these lives, these precious lives, some still in the womb as mamas hopeful, fearful, excited, begin their journey at Tubman. Walking away from unhealthy chapters, drama, family, baby daddies, loved ones who were not really there for them, they want something more than what they've known. They want something more for their children than they ever had for themselves. A home filled with warmth and support. A fresh start. A place to mend their wounded hearts. And no voices in their ears yelling, "No, you can't do this." Yes, yes, we can. We can and we will and we are. Being homeless is not just about having a roof over your head, a pillow under your head. It is about knowing in your head and in your heart that you are safe, that you are loved, and that you are held to the highest expectation of who you already are. My name is Majel, and I am blessed to be a staff member at Tubman House. As a house director, I've lived on site for the last 10 years with residents and their children in support, in love, and in community.
These powerful stories can't help but stay with you. See, Herod had a headline of where he was. But I think God moves not in heads of states, not in headlines, but in the nameless women that were there, keeping on, keeping on. So it was back then, it was Rachel who was weeping. And at this moment, it's some folks right here, and it's strong and courageous, faithful people that inspire us to keep doing that. So I want us to give thanks to them. Have some time at the end of worship to hear from these strong women outside. But the truth is, their stories are your stories and they're my story. And oftentimes we look right past where Matthew is writing. We don't see those stories that are around us because we keep our eyes on the headlines. We live in this social media culture where we want to put everything out there in soundbite. Every face that we see, though, has a story behind it. We heard four of those stories this morning, and the people seated around you have their own stories, and you have your own story. The place where this story in Matthew goes is this. See, you look at Herod, but then Herod dies. And it's the angel, the messenger, that keeps going. And it doesn't feel that way when you're in the middle of the night. It never has, and it probably never will. But that's the power of this story for me. Is that when we go looking for God in headlines, we're looking in the wrong places. So if we can look under that and wonder about the nameless women who were there, who were alive, that Jesus was being called into Egypt, that he could offer a different way, a better way for them to follow. And then to try to align ourselves with just that. Because it's Herod, it's the headline, it's the violence that dies and fades away. And it's the angel, the messenger that just keeps coming. It came a long time ago, and I think it came this morning. It came this morning in these four stories, in their lives, and maybe in your life too. So we're going to take some time to pray about that. And we pray in a lot of different ways here at the table. Last week, Linda invited us into a time of contemplative prayer. We were called to just sit and to listen. So many of us have been taught to pray by talking. What might happen when we slow down and listen to how God is moving in our lives? Maybe then we can see past some of those headlines, past some of the violence, to see a God that works in subversive ways, not fighting power with power or violence with violence, but through unnamed people like them or strong, powerful women like we just witnessed. And maybe the truth is you heard some of your story in their story this morning. Maybe you're in that place right now wondering where you're going to get through. And maybe you're not on the other side like they are. Maybe you're just at the beginning of that. And so maybe the place and the person for you to pray about this morning is yourself. And maybe your partner is one of those folks who's struggling with that dark night of the soul right now. Or maybe it's somebody that you walk right past, or maybe you're a student and you walk right past someone that you don't even know that that person is homeless, but they are. You heard this morning the stories that are under the faces. So I want to invite you to pray about that if you're a student and who are the people around you. I know that some of you spend your whole lives caring for and holding stories just like this as social workers and as nurses, as doctors, as teachers, as activists, as labor organizers, as chaplains. Like, pray about those folks that are going to come to you this coming week. And they're going to give you little pieces of their story, just like we heard this morning. And it's never the fullness of it, but it's a part of it. I want to invite you to hold those people in prayer. Maybe you came feeling so blessed that you can't even fathom a life like one that we've heard about. 10 years old. Deportation. If that feels so foreign to you, I want you to think about the people in our world that you might not know their names, but they live under that kind of fear. And to just hold that in prayer. And it's not beautiful or easy, but Rachel wept. And I believe that God was weeping with her. And if we're going to go looking for God in the world, looking for those epiphanies, I think these are some of the places that we're going to have to look. Within ourselves and around ourselves. So some music is going to start or continue, and Bryce is going to lead us in prayer with a song. And I invite you to just stay right where you are and to close your eyes, to be in prayer. If you need, like I do, like I need to physically move, and that's okay. So I want to encourage you to do that. There's space over on the sides and over here in the prayer stations behind Joe. To light a candle as like a physical reminder of the subtle and subversive ways that God moves behind those stories. So let us move into prayer together.
The world is burning as you're standing by. Are you watching as your children die? Did your heart break? Does your heart break now? Cannot feel it in my soul. Cannot see you. I'm alone. Can the blind have sight? Have sight? When you see us all alone. can you hear your people, Lord? Can the blind have sight?